St. Jude.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
Yeah! The Rough Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, November 9th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And yes, believe it or not, we are back. We are live. I am at Rolla J Studios in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon. It's great to be back home. We tried to do this the other day when I got back home, but we're integrating a lot of new things here. Prime among them is streaming live to CannabisRadio.com via Spreaker. And we had some difficulties with that on Friday where everybody could hear the music, but they couldn't hear my voice. So I had to just bag it. And over the weekend, took down the entire studio, rewired everything, reprogrammed everything, rebooted everything, updated everything. And what do you know? I think it's working. Even without any echoes or anything. So cross your fingers, folks. I think we got it figured out. But we are streaming live on CannabisRadio.com and 420Radio.org. And we're doing this for the rest of 2015 so that everyone can make the transition with me to CannabisRadio.com. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, you also need to update your podcast links to the ones that will be provided by CannabisRadio.com. We're getting those all instituted on iTunes and Stitcher and all the other outlets. And as soon as I know what they are, I'll get those posted for you and you can make the transition as well. Those of you watching on Ustream, you're not watching. You're just seeing a blank screen. You're getting audio only. I didn't get everything solved. There's still a camera issue because you know how video is. It's always a problem. But we'll get that camera issue fixed so that you Ustream and YouTube people can also make the switch over to CannabisRadio.com because that's the only place we will be in 2016. We'll be exclusive at CannabisRadio.com. Now, I'm really excited because I'm 2 days away from getting on a plane for my first international flight. I am headed to Jamaica, man. That's right. We're headed to the High Times Cannabis Cup in Negril, Jamaica. And I take off Friday morning at like 5 a.m, like really, really early. So we will keep you updated. But on Wednesday, there'll be no live show because I will be in airplanes going across the continent once again. So be ready for that. But Thursday, we should be coming to you live from Jamaica. Thursday, Friday, and Monday. Plus, I'll be doing some ad hoc broadcasting when it is appropriate from the venues there on Saturday and Sunday. One of the things we'll be covering, I'm really excited about this, Kyle Cushman is getting married at the Cannabis Cup in Jamaica. So we'll be there to cover that. And you'll want to stick around and make sure you're following me at Radical Russ so that you can get in on that when I'm ready to broadcast it. I don't know exactly when or where it's going to be, but if you'll follow me on Twitter, I'll definitely keep you updated. Also have the Radical Russ Instagram account too. So subscribe to that if you're on Instagram, as well as Periscope. But I don't know if we'll do a lot of periscoping. Data rates from Jamaica are pretty expensive. Coming up on the show today, we got Dr. Mitch Earlywine joining us at 5:30 for our Cannabis Q&A. He's the host of Burning Issues on CannabisRadio.com, and he gives us the rundown of the top 5 or 6 marijuana research stories in the news, so we'll get to that at 5:30. We'll have time for a radical rant. I'm wondering which sort of legalization will be acceptable now that we've decided that capitalism matters. Also, we've got data from Washington State Traffic Safety on THC and driving. I got to debunk some of the figures. Plus, poll data from Canada, a surprising result on what kind of marijuana legalization they'd like in the Great White North. But it all starts off with the Cannabis Radio News. That's coming up next, the headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
The son of a Polish immigrant who grew up in a Brooklyn tenement, he went to public schools, then college,
where the work of his life began, fighting injustice and inequality, speaking truth to power. He moved to Vermont, won election and praise as one of America's best mayors. In Congress, he stood up for working families and for principle, opposing the Iraq War, supporting veterans. Now he's taking on Wall Street and a corrupt political system, funded by over a million contributions, tackling climate change to create clean energy jobs, fighting for living wages, equal pay, and tuition-free public colleges.
People are sick and tired of establishment politics, and they want real change.
Bernie Sanders, husband, father, grandfather, an honest leader, building a movement with you to give us a future to believe in.
I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approve this message.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is available exclusively through CannabisRadio.com in partnership with the Associated Press. Now, your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds in the Cannabis Radio News. This is your Cannabis Radio News for Monday, November 9th, 2015. During a town hall in South Carolina, Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton said that she's in favor of rescheduling marijuana in order to allow researchers to explore the benefits of medical usage. Marijuana is currently classified as a Schedule I drug alongside substances like heroin and LSD, which means the government sees no legitimate medical uses for it. Clinton said that as president, she'd reclassify marijuana to Schedule II, the category for drugs like cocaine, methamphetamine, and prescription painkillers. It would remain an illegal drug for everyday consumption, but would be eligible for possible medical uses. Clinton stopped short of the provision taken by her leading Democratic opponent, Bernie Sanders, who introduced a bill in the Senate that would end the federal ban on marijuana. States could still ban recreational use under Sanders' proposal, but states that legalize marijuana would no longer have to fear federal intervention. A Native American tribe that planned to open the first marijuana resort in the U.S. announced over the weekend that it was burning its crop and temporarily suspending the plans in South Dakota while leaders sought legal guidance from the federal government. The Flandreau Santee Sioux tribe, which planned to open a marijuana lounge on New Year's Eve, was the first tribe in South Dakota to legalize cannabis after U.S. officials suggested in a memo released last year that they were permitted to. In South Dakota, some state officials had questioned the Flandreau Santee Sioux marijuana project, including Attorney General Marty Jackley, who said changes to tribal laws regarding pot would not protect adults who aren't tribal members. Seth Pierman, the Flandreau Santee Sioux tribe's lawyer, said leaders were confident that the venture would succeed after it got further clarification from the U.S. Department of Justice. The campaign to regulate marijuana-like alcohol in Massachusetts, one of two groups attempting to place an initiative legalizing marijuana on the 2016 ballot, said Monday it's gathered more than 100,000 signatures in support. Groups seeking to place an initiative on the statewide ballot must gather at least 64,750 signatures from registered voters in Massachusetts. Campaigns often gather more signatures than necessary, anticipating that some may be deemed invalid. If they gather enough valid signatures, the initiative is then sent to the legislature, and if the legislature doesn't act to approve the measure, activists can go out and gather an additional 10,800 signatures in order to get on the ballot. A competing marijuana legalization group, Bay State Repeal, has also been gathering signatures. Bay State Repeal has argued their proposal has fewer regulatory restrictions. Massachusetts voters chose to decriminalize small amounts of marijuana in 2008 and legalized medical marijuana in 2012. The Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board is accepting a second wave of applications for new marijuana retail licenses. Gone are the quotas and lotteries used in the first round of licensing.
Now there are no limits on the number of licenses that may be granted, a change that took some cities by surprise. When Initiative 502, the measure to legalize pot, was implemented, state regulators set limits on how many pot stores a city or county could have. Seattle, for example, received 21 of these so-called golden tickets. But when state legislators opened the licensing process to medical marijuana businesses last spring, they eliminated quotas. Instead, they want to bring gray market medical marijuana into the state-regulated system. The Liquor and Cannabis Board has issued 212 retail licenses so far, but regulators estimate that this new round could more than double the number of licensed stores. Despite New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's vow to veto any attempt to legalize marijuana, a fact-finding hearing on the issue will be held next week to build support in the legislature, according to the bill's sponsor. Senator Nicholas Scutari, a Democrat of Union, who introduced the bill 18 months ago, said the Senate Judiciary Committee he chairs will hold a meeting next Monday, calling it a, quote, first step in the process of finally reversing our punitive marijuana laws that have caused harm to our residents and our communities, end quote. Scutari said the drug war was, as far as marijuana is concerned, has been a costly failure. He cited a report by the American Civil Liberties Union that found New Jersey spent $127.3 million on enforcement. The report also found African Americans are nearly three times more likely in New Jersey to be arrested for marijuana possession than whites, even though the rate of marijuana use is similar. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Monday, November 9th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Gondrepreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Gondrepreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Gondrepreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping gondrepreneurs grow.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Welcome back, everybody. As we go behind the headlines today, we're taking a look at a new forum poll that's been taken on legalization in Canada that found that 59% support the new Liberal government stance on legalizing, taxing, and regulating cannabis for adult use. Very closely mirroring the recent Gallup poll that showed 58% support for legalization in the United States. But once you look behind the headlines, you find something interesting. Canada wants a more liberal marijuana legalization than the U.S., but they want it controlled in the same way that Ohio just rejected. First of all, a key difference is that in the U.S. polls that got 58% support, the question being asked is whether or not marijuana should be legal for people 21 and older. The Canadian poll, the forum poll with 59% support, is for adults 18 and older. Very interesting there, getting a much, not a much higher, but about the same rate as the U.S. poll, but for even younger people. I don't think you'd get that rate with 18 and older in America. Now, in the United States, people over the age of 65, our senior citizens, still oppose legalization. You only get 35% support among people 65 and older. But in the Canadian poll, seniors age 65 and older approve of marijuana legalization. Now, just barely, it's at 50%, but it's only 40% opposed. So the plurality supports it. In fact, there's no age demographic in Canada that still approves of prohibition. And Canadian citizens in all the provincial regions of the country support legalization at about the same rates, and as do citizens belonging to every political party in Canada except the Conservative Party that was just swept out of leadership Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party took over the majority control in Parliament. But to me, the most interesting data from the poll is the question that asked Canadians how they would like to see marijuana taxed and regulated. The majority, 57%, preferred a system where the Canadian government only licenses large corporate growers, compared to 33% who preferred some other kind of system. And that kind of system was proposed just last week to voters in the U.S. state of Ohio. In Ohio's issue 3, which was defeated with just 36% support, in Ohio's issue 3, the state constitution would have designated 10 pre-owned plots of land for commercial growing, and there'd just be a handful of basically large corporations that would supply marijuana to over 1,000 independent retail marijuana outlets. But the Canadians who supported the large corporate grows are dominated by those who'd prefer an even tighter system than what Ohio proposed. 12% of all the Canadian respondents supported the question, quote, or the scenario, quote, licensing corporate growers only, then selling it and taxing it through retail outlets. And that was kind of similar to Ohio's plan, right? You'd have just a few big corporate growers and then over 1,000 independent retail outlets. But 45% supported, quote, licensing corporate growers only, then selling and taxing it through government agencies, end quote. You know, like a state-run liquor store model, right? You'd have to go to the pot store. There wouldn't be independent pot shops. They'd all be run by the government or some authority, public authority, basically, government agencies. In that poll, only 16% of Canadians, one out of six, supported, quote, allowing private citizens to grow and sell their own product and self-report their taxes, end quote. And another 17% chose something else or none of these three options. Then as far as the demographics go of pot smokers in Canada, almost one in five Canadians, or is 18% actually, admitted to using cannabis in the past year, including over a third of those aged 18 to 34. It was 34%. A quarter of adults in the Atlantic provinces and British Columbia, so the coast, just like America, right, admit to annual consumption, the greatest amount, regionally, as do politically over a fifth of liberals, 22%, and over a third of Greens, 35%. Makes sense, right? And another 11% of Canadians who do not use cannabis say they are very likely or somewhat likely to try it once it's legal, meaning 3 out of 10 Canadian adults would be likely cannabis consumers.
Rabba-dabba-goo!
3 out of 10 Canadian adults would be likely cannabis consumers if prohibition were ended. 30%. Amazing. Hey folks, that whistle means it's 20 after, 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone, so our friends in Denver, Colorado are getting it on, as well as people all throughout the Mountain Time Zone, all the way up into Canada, who don't care if it's legal or not. Be right back with Drug War Data Mine after this.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Your connection to quality cannabis insurance services is spelled
K-A-E-R-C-H-E-R.
That's Karcher Insurance. We have worked with ventures like cannabis for over 60 years. We're proud to represent over 50 companies with tailor-made cannabis business plans for owners just like you to ensure your product, your plants, and your pursuits.
K-A-E-R-C-H-E-R
spells out their full-service insurance services, ranging from commercial commercial to bonds to personal, from life to health, and more. Contact the team at KaecherInsurance.com and let our experience work for you. That's KaecherInsurance.com.
Contact Karen and the team at Karcher Insurance at 1-844-421-3560. That's 844-421-3560.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
There's a new report out from the Washington State Traffic Safety Commission. It's called Driver Toxicology Testing and the Involvement of Marijuana in Fatal Crashes 2010 to 2014. And as usual, it's generated some frightening headlines in the mainstream media. King 5 News in Seattle says, more Washington drivers test positive for THC in deadly crashes since 2010. Breitbart News says, Washington marijuana-related traffic fatalities double after pot legalized. And my hometown paper, The Oregonian, says, fatal crashes involving marijuana doubled in Washington after legalization. Oh no! Legalization has led to stoned mayhem on the freeways! At least if you trust the news media's reporting, which ignores one very salient point. There was not much difference in the total number of traffic fatalities from 2010 to 2014. In 2010, there were 460 drivers who died on Washington roads. In 2014, there were 462 drivers who died on Washington roads. The average of the 3 years before legalization, 2010, 2011, 2012, comes up to just a shade over 450. The average of the 2 years since, 2013 and 2014, comes up to 449. So, if no more people are dying on the freeways than before legalization, what is the problem? Well, according to the media, it's that more stoned drivers are dying and fewer drunk drivers are dying. While traffic fatalities over the alcohol limit, the 0.08 BAC, have dropped almost a quarter since 2010, fatalities involving THC alone or with alcohol and or drugs have doubled or tripled. But digging deeper into those numbers reveals the statistical sleight of hand. Indeed, alcohol only, greater than 0.08, those fatalities dropped from 67 in 2010 to 51 in 2014. But why should the fatality deaths involving THC plus alcohol or THC plus alcohol plus drugs get blamed on the THC? Studies show that alcohol is a far more impairing substance than marijuana or drugs, and that marijuana and drugs found in one system aren't as indicative of impairment like a 0.08 for alcohol is. So, when the THC plus alcohol jumps from 16 to 23, from 2010 to 2014, that just shows us an increase in drunk driving deaths among people who also happen to smoke pot. The THC plus drugs plus alcohol increase from 2 to 6 shows us the same thing. We can't know whether the THC or drugs were affecting the driver, but the 0.08 BAC does tell us alcohol was affecting the driver. So, if you add in all the alcohol-related deaths at or above 0.08 BAC, drugs, marijuana, or not, it went from 85 in 2010 to 80 in 2014. Not much difference. Now, understand that when we're talking about the THC-related fatalities here, we're not talking about inactive carboxy-THC metabolites that you find on a urine screen. All of the carboxy-THC statistics declined, including carboxy-THC only is down 45%, carboxy-THC plus alcohol is down 75%, carboxy-THC plus drugs is down 50%, and carboxy-THC plus drugs plus alcohol is down 100%. So this isn't metabolites we're talking about. We're talking about active THC, and that's where the scare data about the fatalities is being found. In 2010, There were 81 fatalities that had tested positive for cannabinoids, but only 36 of those were for active THC. And only one third of those, 12 of them, were over the 5 nanogram per se DUID limit in Washington. In 2014, there were 89 fatalities with cannabinoids, but a whopping 75 of them were active THC, and almost half of them were over the 5 nanogram limit. So, in other words, active THC-involved fatalities more than doubled since 2010, and those over 5 nanograms more than tripled. So, should we be terrified now? Not really. First, even though active THC is a better measure than inactive metabolites, it is still not indicative of impairment. A 2015 study in the Journal of Analytical Toxicology tested 11 frequent cannabis consumers and found that most of them had detectable THC above 5 nanograms even 8 to 14 hours after their last smoking. So when we test a driver following a fatality crash, we're more likely to find that they are a frequent marijuana consumer, but that doesn't tell us that frequent marijuana consumers are more likely to be in fatality crashes. We're probably more likely to find married gay drivers in fatality crashes these days too, now that there is access to marriage for gay people. Just as we're more likely to be finding marijuana in the system of the fatality-involved driver now that there's better access to marijuana for tokers. But that's not the only confounding part about this report. The other problem is that when you come back from the river with twice as many fish, it doesn't necessarily mean there are twice as many fish in the river. It could mean you switched from using a fishing pole to a fishing net. That's what Washington State has done with respect to detecting THC in its fatality crashes. This is from the report. On January 1, 2013, the Washington State Patrol Toxicology Lab reset the THC reporting threshold to 1 nanogram per milliliter and began conducting full panel alcohol and drug tests on all traffic crash blood sample submissions. Prior to this date, the lab tested blood for the presence of alcohol first. Only if blood alcohol concentrations were under 0.10, the lab then conducted drug testing. In addition, full panel alcohol and drug testing was only performed when a driver was involved in vehicular homicide and assault or underwent a drug recognition expert examination. So, in other words, prior to 2013, before legalization took effect, a drunk driver who was over 0.10 wouldn't be drug tested at all, versus now when any driver can be drug tested. Prior to legalization, only drivers charged with vehicular homicide were tested, versus now when any driver can be tested. Prior to legalization, only drivers suspected of impaired driving by a drug recognition expert were drug tested versus now when Washington State has more drug recognition experts. And prior to legalization, anybody under 2 nanograms of THC wasn't counted versus now when 1 nanogram is the threshold. So what a surprise then that before legalization, when the state was using a fishing pole for drug testing, there were lower numbers of marijuana-related fatalities than after legalization when the state was using a fishing net. The most important part of this data is this. Since marijuana has been legally for sale in Washington State, traffic fatality rates have not budged. Even the state itself tells us, quote, "The information in this report cannot be used to determine if marijuana is or is not causing fatal crashes," end quote. No matter what the mainstream media might be telling you. We got more cannabis science coming up next. Dr. Mitch is on the air with us live right after this break. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
MJWellness.com, the largest medical marijuana community in the world. Connect with thousands of patients, doctors, industry leaders, and businesses through shared personal experiences along our worldwide network. Discover new therapies and benefits with content tailored to you. Come grow your network on MJWellness.com. You're not alone. Your wellness matters. Learn, live, and thrive. Check out MJWellness.com today.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cannabis Q&A with the host of Burning Issues on CannabisRadio.com. It's Dr. Mitch Earlywine. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
So glad to hear your voice and be back on your show, man.
Oh, it's great. I've been traveling a whole bunch. By the end of this year, I'll have 45,000 air miles.
Holy cow.
I know. I should get a frequent flyer, but since I'm taking a different airline every time, they never build up enough miles on any one of them, so... I got to find a way around that. Anyway, folks, reminder, our phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. If you'd like to get your question into our chat room for Dr. Mitch Earlywine. And until then, we will get Dr. Mitch's reaction to some of the stories that are in the cannabis research and study news that are out there. And the first one, Dr. Mitch, which one did you want to tackle here first? Let's see. We've got the how about this? Chuck Rosenberg, head of the DEA, says that medical marijuana is a joke. And I think the only joke I found in there was him talking about smoking leaf. What's your reaction to Chuck Rosenberg?
I was completely flabbergasted. The Journal of the American Medical Association, literally 3 weeks before this, had just said medical marijuana, it's for real, and had a whole issue basically devoted to it. And then the head of the DEA can't read JAMA? I mean, it was just completely embarrassing. I was stunned.
You know, we had thought once we had gotten rid of Michelle Lenhart that this sort of nonsense would maybe abate a little bit, but it seems like they're in full reefer madness mode still. Why? I mean, they're so much, they're so far behind in the polls. Like 90% of the people now support medical marijuana. We're getting to the point where half the states are going to have it. What's their intransigence? There's only 10 states that don't recognize some form. I mean, even down to the CBD oil. So what's going on with the DEA? What are they smoking, and how do I get some?
I feel like Chuck really isn't on top of this literature, and I understand being DEA, that job has to suck, man. But he's got a whole lot on his plate, but he could certainly have one of his assistants just pick up that last issue of the Journal of American Medical Association and write him a little blurb. It's kind of embarrassing.
What a shame. Well, we'll still have to fight more to get marijuana's medical usage recognized. And the good news in that respect come from the two leaders in the Democratic Party that are fighting for the 2016 nomination to one degree or the other. Senator Sanders has proposed a bill to completely deschedule cannabis, you know, treat it like alcohol or tobacco. And Hillary Clinton has taken a more measured approach by proposing reclassification of marijuana down to Schedule 2. Which proposal would you favor, and what would you tell the other candidate as to why they need to switch their position?
Well, I'm sure all our listeners will be stunned to learn that I want to declassify, not reclassify. And I'm afraid Hillary Clinton's proposal is just not going to make much change for the good. I really would have a hard time getting any research done with a Schedule II drug. We'd still end up with ridiculous arrests. It's just not going to get to where we need to go with a plant with a 5,000-year safety history.
And I had read Normal's deputy director, Paul Armentano, had written, maybe it was in a Facebook post, about how there are special regulations, even among the Schedule I drugs. Cannabis has its own little regulations to it, so even if you moved it to Schedule II, it wouldn't change those regulations. Is that accurate?
Sad but true. And Russ, the irony is you'd still have to go to the federal source for the plant. So literally, you know, you could have an open dispensary right next door, but if you had National Institute of Health research money, you couldn't use that cannabis. You'd have to go get the ditchweed from Mississippi.
Hmm. Now, what a shame. But as far as I'm aware, Senator Sanders endorsing complete descheduling is the most progressive position on marijuana reform any two-party candidate has ever taken.
I just like that guy more and more every day. I don't know what to say.
Well, you know, you're up there in upstate New York. He's from New Hampshire. They're in Vermont, that area. So maybe there's something in the water up there.
I can only hope.
Well, speaking of New York, there's a story coming off of Medscape here. Now, New York, by all accounts, has one of the most dysfunctional medical marijuana programs out there. Non-plant, non-smokable medical marijuana. If I'm not mistaken, there's just five producers or something, some low number like that. But the latest story talks about how doctors in New York are going to have to complete a four-hour course in order to be able to recommend cannabis. Now, I got to thinking, maybe this is a good thing since so few doctors actually ever hear of the endocannabinoid system, but what's your take on this, being in upstate New York yourself?
I mean, you know, I'm always delighted to make sure folks get as much education as possible. The sad thing is it's $250.
Oh.
It's not going to be particularly accessible. Every physician has to have a certain number of continuing ed credits every year. So I think, it's going to be great to have the hours. But I just feel like it's stacking the deck against the kind of encouragement we need for physicians to become regular prescribers and to really, end the agony associated with all these illnesses. I'm still lamenting the fact that New York has really only approved a small subset of the potential disorders, and some of them just are, markedly less sensible. The fact that we have Huntington's disease, which is relatively rare and doesn't have the overwhelming support that something as simple as insomnia might have, kind of breaks my heart.
Yeah, and that's part of that medicine of last resort thinking. You know, if you're dead and dying, well, okay, we can overlook you being a pothead, I suppose. So. That's the kind of framing we're attacking here on Cannabis Radio. And check out CannabisRadio.com for Dr. Mitch's show, Burning Issues. You can get a podcast every week with a lot more in-depth discussion of some of these topics. Now, another topic in here that, oh my goodness, this one rings true to me, Dr. Mitch. It says the presence of THC metabolites in hair is not necessarily indicative of marijuana ingestion. Did a whole bunch of people trying to get a job just get a new excuse, Dr. Mitch?
I gotta admit, but I think they deserve the excuse. So, it's a not, the hugest sample or anything like that. Nature Scientific Reports as sort of a way to get ideas out fast and furiously. But they're basically showing that there are a lot of different ways you could end up with THC metabolites in your hair. And they certainly aren't all because you necessarily ingested it, and definitely don't mean that you ingested it recently.
Wow. And there's been other problems with hair testing. I've read reports on it being racially biased against people with thick, coarse hair, Mediterranean or African-American style hair. So that's always been a problem. And then, a guy like me with a shaved head for the most part, having to get armpit or chest hair for a job, just beyond the pale. And I'm glad to hear about this study.
I just always would much rather see a work sample than a hair sample.
There we go. A resume. How about that? All right. Let's take a look at some of the medical aspects here that are coming out. I want to remind folks that our phone line is open. If you want to call in, it's 971-533-7111. Or we're watching on both the Cannabis Radio and 420 Radio chat lines. If you've got a question out there, we'll be glad to ask it of Dr. Mitch. But if you're shy and you want to keep it private, you can always send an email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Now, in the medical marijuana news, very interesting study claims that marijuana can treat ADHD, adult, and I don't remember what it stands for.
Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder.
There we go.
It's funny because my student Mallory Laughlin had published a paper on this just based on some self-reports from some of the listeners here and some of the folks on the normal listserv. And it's very strain dependent and very symptom dependent. So I don't think this is going to be replacing all the other treatments, but it's sure nice to be able to add this. And, you know, it's a relatively small sample, but what a surprise. As soon as they all had the chance to switch to cannabis, the vast majority of them wanted to. And I think the key to understand is that, ironically, these are hyperactive people, but a stimulant actually helps them calm down. So the Ritalins and the amphetamine-type treatments basically give the brain enough arousal so you don't have to run around fast trying to seek more. Mm. And I feel like the more stimulating strains, the stereotypical sativas, are the ones that are going to be beneficial. And I think early trials could be confusing if we don't pay particular attention to the strain.
Yeah, I was just, you know, as you said that, I was thinking, yeah, all these studies that we've got, and we look them up on PubMed, and they're all talking about smoking a 5% THC joint, but that's the Mississippi ditchweed, isn't it?
Sad but true. If it's an administration done here in the U.S., that's what it is.
Oh, my goodness. All right. And one more great story here, and quite ironic considering that organ transplant lists and those hospitals often kick you off the list if you test positive for cannabis. But this report out of the UK says, could cannabis help transplant patients by delaying the rejection of organs and slowing your immune system's attack against the foreign organ? What do we know about this?
So this is actually pretty wild, and I was afraid this was going to turn on us and people were going to say, oh, THC is going to hurt your immune system. It's not an immune suppressant so much as an immune system regulator. And here's an opportunity to essentially delay the rejection of incompatible organs in a way that's really helpful. And nobody ever really talks about it, but the meds you end up taking in order to get a transplant are super nauseating. So I do feel like the other potential is that this could make folks be more likely to stick on the regimen that would be required in order to make sure that they can essentially get an organ transplant.
Yeah, and, you know, I went through that transplant situation with my friend Ganja John getting his kidney transplant, and the THC, well, seemed to ease his pain, and it didn't seem to hurt the transplant any, so we're happy that everything turned out well for him. Before we go, Dr. Mitch Earlywine is the host of Burning Issues on CannabisRadio.com. Any preview of upcoming episodes you'd like to give?
Oh, so I had a splendid recording with Normal founder Keith Strupp that should be up soon. And I've got, you know, some wonderful stories to tell. Your neighbor there, Madeline Martinez, and I should be getting a show up relatively soon as well. I think listeners would get a big kick out of it. And then the last 6 minutes are always not necessarily cannabis related, but more just self-care and mental health and having a good day. So people might want to tune into that. And it's a good way to sneak, you know, your non-user friends into the podcast and get them to eventually hear the good word.
That's right. Burning Issues with Dr. Mitch Earlywine on CannabisRadio.com. And Dr. Mitch, I'll see you in D.C. in a couple weeks for the DPA conference.
Alas, the parenting conflicts interfered. We'll have to wait till May and go down there for the legislative line.
All right. We'll see you then. Thanks, Dr. Mitch, for joining us. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Take care.
All right, folks, stick around. Time for a radical rant right after the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. Which forms of marijuana legalization will be acceptable now that Ohio Issue 3 has gone down in flames?
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show. the voice of the marijuana nation. This is the Russ Belville Show.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
I'm Captain Lou Albano talking about drugs. Kids, don't be afraid to say no. Anyone that asks you to use drugs is not your friend. Drugs can and will kill. Remember, don't be afraid to turn to your priest, your rabbi, your minister, your moms, your dads, your teachers, because drugs can kill. And if you do drugs, you go to hell before you die.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Maui Wowie. Acapulco Gold. California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere, too. This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
The devastating defeat of Ohio's Issue 3 last week has been interpreted by some observers as a victory against the corporatization of marijuana. On Bill Maher's HBO show, he opined that marijuana was the one seed Monsanto hasn't messed with yet. And can't the hippies control it for a while before R.J. Reynolds takes over? Even Willie Nelson spoke out against the advance of so-called big marijuana monopolizing the weed industry. The implication is that if a marijuana legalization plan doesn't sufficiently open up marijuana growing and selling to the little guy, prohibition should be allowed to continue. Corporate-controlled marijuana has been elevated to a greater boogeyman status than the police who strip search, rape, and kill people over the smell of marijuana. This economic reframing of the marijuana legalization debate restricts the options for marijuana legalization. The Ohio model that was just rejected was based on a suggested framework from a report written by the Rand Corporation for the state of Vermont, which wanted to know all the possible ways marijuana laws could be reformed. Rand came up with something of a spectrum of 12 marijuana legalization options. From the most repressive, I should say 12 marijuana regulation options, from the most repressive to the most liberal. The extreme options on the end, on one side, was to double down on the drug war. They called it prohibit and increase sanctions. That's on the repressive side. Then on the other end, the other extreme end, complete deregulation, or as they called it, repeal only of state prohibition. That would be on the more progressive side. Okay, drug war on one side, deregulation on the other side. And then one level in
from the extremes were what they called the commonly discussed options. Rand talks about decriminalization, or as they call it, prohibit but decrease sanctions. That's your Project Sam model, right? Still illegal, but we won't punish you as bad. That's on the repressive side. And then on the other side, just one step before complete deregulation, is regulate like alcohol. You know, what we've got in place in four states already, something Rand calls the standard commercial model. So you got your extremes, drug war, and deregulation, and then your commonly discussed options, the Project Sam style decrim versus Colorado, Alaska, Oregon, Washington style tax and regulate, right? So of those four options, of course, reformers aren't going to support more drug war, and they should support decriminalization because there's nothing involved with the market that way. It's just lowering punishments. The other extreme of complete deregulation seems pretty unlikely in America. So for the one remaining choice of the four main options listed, that standard commercial model, the question now becomes, what will qualify as standard for capitalist marijuana advocates? I mean, how many grow licenses must be made available? 10, 20, 50? And how low must the application fees be? 100,000, 50,000, 25,000, 10,000, 1,000? Where will the numbers have to be set so that this isn't interpreted as some big corporate oligopolistic cash grab that squeezes out the little guy like Ohio's issue 3? But then there are eight other options that Rand discusses that don't get discussed as much in America, known as middle ground options. Something between decrim and full market legalization, right? Something in the middle, right? So of these eight, how many of them would now be vetoed by capitalist marijuana reformers as being anti-free market? Here's the list that Rand came up with. We'll start on the more repressive side, the more restrictive side, one step above decrim, and then we'll move our way toward the more progressive side. We'll move toward full market legalization. So the first step of the eight was grow and give, or as Rand calls it, allow adults to grow their own. This is the system currently in place in Washington, D.C., and was the system in Alaska for decades before their legalization. Adults can cultivate a small amount of marijuana and possess it and share it, but there's no commerce allowed. No pot shops, no commercial grows. Now, this isn't giving the market to anybody, but doesn't legalize any kind of market. So would the capitalist marijuana reformers approve of a grow and give style system? The next level above grow and give would be the buyer's club model. This is what they called communal own grow and distribution. This is a model like the Spanish collective model, which allows consumers to grow in cooperative gardens and then sell the marijuana amongst the collective's members at cost. Now, this model would exemplify the small, artisanal, little guy grows that are favored by the political left of the capitalist marijuana reformers. But would the more business-minded libertarian right find that to be an unfair restraint on trade? The next level up, next more progressive model, the coffee shop model, or as they call it, retail sales only. This is the Dutch model. This is Amsterdam, where the growing and wholesale distribution of cannabis is still strictly illegal. But the sales and possession of small personal use amounts of marijuana are tolerated through their well-regulated coffee shops. Now, this model ends the arrests for personal possession and use, but home cultivators and commercial growers remain criminals. So could the capitalist marijuana reformers bring themselves to support this scenario? Next level. Government control, or as Rand called it, government operates the supply chain. This would be a system similar to Uruguay, where the government produces and sells all the marijuana, perhaps also including a registration system for marijuana consumers. Now, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, capitalist marijuana advocates would be sure to reject this system, since this would be an actual monopoly, a government monopoly on weed. So I can't see him supporting that. The next level up is public authority near monopoly, they call it. This would have a single government-sanctioned private entity in charge of marijuana production and distribution. It insulates the state from its employees and agencies being charged with federal law violations, but functionally, it would be pretty similar to government control. It'd be the cannabis authority or whatever, and it would still be monopolistic enough that capitalist marijuana reformers wouldn't support it. So the next more progressive of the eight models, number six here, nonprofit organizations. Only allow nonprofit organizations to grow and distribute marijuana. Governments might like this because it could slow the growth and keep it from being all about profit, and they could control the marketing better. But would some capitalist marijuana reformers accept it being nonprofit, or would they reject it for not allowing for, you know, full free market opportunities? Now, a compromise between nonprofit and for-profit would be for benefit corporations. There's 27 states that have this. They're allowed to make some profit, but they also have to have some public benefit considerations. That might be more palatable to the capitalist marijuana advocates. Finally, there's the model that just got rejected in Ohio. They call it very few monitored for-profit licensees, or a structured oligopoly, where just a few licenses are granted that gives the government closer oversight of just a few regulated entities. In fact, Responsible Ohio quoted this report benefiting Ohio by saying, quote, a rogue company could more easily break the rules if it were one of 1,000 licensees than if it were one of just 10, end quote. Well, folks, this is a war my government declared on me, and my enemies are not investors and capitalists. My enemies are cops and drug testers. So me, I'll support every one of those options that Rand proposes that moves us further away from the regressive side. But sadly, it seems to me there's now a faction, these capitalist marijuana reformers, who would accept only fewer than half of those 10 possible options. Let the states be the laboratory of democracy, and maybe some of them will pick a structured oligopoly. Maybe some will pick allowing nonprofit organizations or having a single state-run public authority. If you're in this to end arrests and help patients, any step we make toward that more progressive side, toward that true deregulation that we'd all eventually like to see, must be supported. It's bigger than economics to me, folks. It's about civil rights. It's about people's lives, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you